You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. I love you, brothers and sisters, and I must tell you something that I believe that Yahweh wants you to know. What you're going through with this immigration thing, I'm just going to slap right into this because I think it's very important what Yahweh wants you to know about this. This is happening because of our disobedience. This is happening for many, many reasons. Now, our sisters are being raped. What does Yahweh want us to learn from this? You see, the Jew has poisoned our females, and they no longer need us. And they've been very rude to a lot of us. Not all of them, but many of them who ascribe to the Jewess's feminist nonsense that was designed to destroy us, including you, my sisters. What Yahweh wants you to know is you do need your men. Yes, this nonsense of your independence and how you've just walked away from your race is not right. The Jew has shown a picture of our men to be weak, and you have fallen for it. Now, there are some of our men that are weak, okay? And this isn't just a rebuke for you, sisters, or a lesson to be learned. It's time for you to turn back to not only Yahweh, your God, but it's time for you to turn back to your race and stick together with your race. Yes, you do need the men of the Anglo-Saxon race. Yes, you do. You need the men for protection. You need the men for many, many reasons. For procreation, for longevity, and just to be in the place that Yahweh wants you to be in the first place. He doesn't want you following the Jews' ways and becoming independent and walking away from your own race. This is just what the Jew wants for you. And it's just what you have done, right? All men are pigs, especially our own men, right? Now, what are the brothers? What are my brothers to learn from this? Now, this is not all that's to be learned from this, okay? But we, as the Anglo-Saxon race, seem to have become islands, separate islands, each man his own island, each man thinking of his own ways, his own prosperity, his own pleasure, his own whatever it is it may be. We barely speak to one another, and that includes the sisters too. And what the lesson is there is strength in numbers. It is that way in the kingdom. As more of us pray and more of us become prayer warriors, the more strength there will be within us. We need to bond together again. Forget about your own island. We need to speak to one another. We need to listen to one another. And we need to learn how to put our differences aside, because these differences really aren't that big anyway. Either you do this or die. That's just about says it all right there for you, okay? The title of this message is The Serpentine Fire, Part 2. Now, we learned a lot last week, I'm sure. I did. I'm sure you did. Before I move on, I'd like to read one quote that I haven't heard for quite some time. And what's funny about quotes and things that you will see on Google, if you are a truth searcher and you are a new truth searcher, beware. Everything that is taught about the Jews is a hoax. There's none of it's real. Well, that's not the truth. And this very quote, I saw one of the first things that came up was this thing saying, oh, this is a hoax. Okay. I'll prove to you it's not a hoax very easily. Okay. This is, from 1879, a letter from Baruch Levy to Karl Marx. Now, I haven't heard this quote for quite some time. I haven't heard it for a long time. So I figure I'll renew it to all of us. Pay attention. The Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world domination by the dissolution of other races. Hear me getting closer to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. When I get close to the microphone and I start speaking lower, it means that you are to listen up. See, if I was speaking loud, you could just stay the way you were. I want you to hear what it just said. Listen again. What is the dissolution of other races? What's happening to all of our races? We're being dissolved, are we not? Are we not being dissolved out of existence to becoming the brown man that these Jews wish? So let's listen very carefully as I read it. I'm going to read the whole thing this time, but I want you to pay attention. And can you, as the listener, dear listener, will you just see if you can connect the dots and say, that's what's happening today. This is exactly what's happening today. Listen very, very carefully, if you will. The Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world domination by the dissolution of other races, by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. dear listeners. In this new world order, hello, the new world order. In this new world order, the children of Israel, it says Israel, they're not the children of Israel, they are the children of the devil. So in this new world order, the children of Israel will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition. the governments of the different peoples forming the world republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the promise of the Talmud be fulfilled. Not the promise of the Bible. They don't care about the Bible. Thus will the promise of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which it said that when the messianic time is come, the Jews will have all the property of the whole world in their hands. Now, I don't even think I really need to prove that to you. Let's go by it. Let's go through it piece by piece. Have the Jews said that they will be their own Messiah? Yes, they have. Since this. I've seen it many times, by the way. Are they trying to dissolve all of the other races? Ladies and gentlemen, I don't watch TV, but you do. Do you see that they promote race mixing? In every ad, I do see ads on the computer, and I see it all over the place. So, of course, the answer is yes. How about the abolition of frontiers? We have no borders in any of our countries anymore. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. Have they annihilated the monarchies? Yes, other than in England, which is a puppet monarchy. So it's all done. The monarchies are over with. Now, do the Jews exercise the privilege of citizenship? Well, thanks to the seventh beast, Napoleon, yes, he let them out of the ghettos. Are they furnishing the leaders of the world today? Well, the Bushes were Jews. The Clintons were Jews, because Clinton is a bastard child, supposedly, of the Rockefellers, who are crypto-Jews. They married Rothschild's daughters, his sons. So they're Jews. They act like Jews. They are Jews. FDR was a Jew. Truman, as far as I'm concerned, was a Jew. What about the other countries of the world? We have a Jew, Cameron, who had sex with a dead pig. Now, there's a good, a solid citizen you would want to have leading your country, wouldn't you? We have a Falasha Jew leading America right now, but he's not the first Falasha Jew. There was Eisenhower, who was another Falasha Jew. So, yes, the answer is we had Nicolas Sarkozy in France. We have Mama Merkel, who is a Jew, yes, etc., etc., etc. Okay? So, the question has been answered. Yes, they will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition. So, it fell into the hands of the Jews, as they say. Are they acquiring all the property of the world through their usury and through evil? Yes, they are. Piece by piece, chunk by chunk. Are they making use of the resources of the states that they're in? When I say state, the state of America, the state of England. Are they using our resources to destroy us? Yes, they are. Are they taking away our money and giving it to people that don't deserve it? Yes, they are. Okay? So I need not say any more about this quote. Just keep it in mind. It's 1879, a letter from Baruch Levy to Karl Marx, both Jews, by the way. And Karl Marx, of course, these are communist principles and have been the goals of the so-called Illuminati, but just let's call them who they really are, the Jews, for a very long time. They accomplished this conquering of the monarchies through revolutions in France, Russia, etc. You know the ball game, ladies and gentlemen. Now, to further prove this, go right now, if you're on your computer listening, and I'll wait a second for you to go to see it, and I want you to go to Google and images, and I want you to pull up Baphomet. B-A-P-H-O-M-E-T. Come on now, skip to it. Let's get to it. Okay. You'll see a black and white picture. You'll see a lot of pictures there. Make sure it's the one where he has his two fingers pointed up. It looks like the way Jesus has in these pictures, even though that's not Jesus. Okay? So one hand's going up and one hand's going down, and there are words on his arm. On his particular right arm, we see the word solve. Okay? Now that you see it, look on his left arm and we see coagulate. What does coagulate, what happens during coagulation? Things dissolve. They emulsify, correct? And I don't even have the full picture here. You'll see a white crescent, and then below you'll see a black crescent. And Chris Peed had shown me this time ago, and it was very interesting. I know he's right. He told me what this meant. What it means is the very thing that Baruch Levy said in the letter. Okay, so we see the word solve and we see coagulate. We know what they mean, right? Okay, the dissolution of other races. So to coagulate the races and mix them together and to destroy the white race, to actually consume it, until it is no more. Absolved, you know, to dissolve the white race by coagulation with race mixing. Do you understand? Are you hearing what I'm telling you? Okay, now you know what that stands for. Notice the androgynous god, so-called god. He's no god. Lucifer is not a god. He's a wannabe angel. He will never be a god, especially not to any of us, you know, unless you're completely stupid. Notice that he's got female breasts, but he's a male. Notice that he's not a sheep, he's a goat. He's a he-she goat. He's a hybrid. Just as if you mix your race with somebody else's race, you become a hybrid. And your race is dissolved in the coagulation. It can't be brought back once it's dissolved in the coagulation of race mixing. Let me say the word again. The race mixing. I got to keep saying these words, white, race mixing, until you're desensitized to these Jew-created keywords, until you're no longer frightened to be called a racist. You're no longer frightened to be called an anti-Semite because it means anti-white in the first place, as I've told you 1,000 times and will have to keep telling you until you understand that the Jews are not Shemitic. They are not Semitic. The Anglo-Saxon people are Shemitic. We came from Shem. It's a little trickery of the Jew to get you to say the word anti-Semitic, because he's laughing because he's calling you anti-white, and you're afraid of that. And if you knew it meant anti-white, you'd say, I'm not anti-white. I love my race, right? He's calling you what he is. And this is the technique of the Jews. And we've proven this to you over and over and over. They always call other people what they do. They call them what they are. They are anti-Semitic. They are anti-white. They have taught the other families of the world to be anti-white. The blacks are anti-Semitic. The Muslims are anti-Semitic. The Pakis are anti-Semitic. The Syrians are anti-Semitic. Do you get it? So don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Yes, I'm a racist. Yes. Oh, if it means that if I love my race, I'm a racist. Well, then I'm a racist. That's all. Oh, you're a Nazi sympathizer. Oh, yes, I am. I know what happened in World War II. Do you? They happen to be my race. I love my race. Oh, then you're like Hitler. Well, I think Hitler did a lot of good things for my race. And he knew about the Jew. And now we've been hearing what his speeches say, and they don't say anything that the Jew taught me they said. And World War II is nothing like they taught me, these Jews. So therefore, I have to go on the side of the truth. I can't abide with lies, can I? Just for the sake of abiding with lies? Just to satisfy you? You can call me all those names, all the names you want. I don't care. What are you going to do after you call me the name? See, that's my point. I don't care. Now, when you talk about neo-Nazi organizations, those are all Jewish run. The skinheads, all that stuff, when you look at it, they're all Jews. The Nazi party in America has been run by Jews, one after another, after another, after another. It's a game. The Germans weren't called Nazis. That's what Pastor Dan said, and he's right. They didn't call themselves Nazis. That's from the Ashkenazi Jews. Ashkenazi Jews. Look them up. That's what they call them in Europe. Ashkenazi. That was the last name of General Burkhalter on Hogan's Heroes. His true name. Ashkenazi. N-A-Z-I. Okay, I think I've made my point, and I'm certain I will have to keep making these same points to you until it sinks into your heads. Do not be afraid of name calling. What are you, a fifth grader? Suck it up. Stand tall. You are of the Adamic race. The top race of the world. The children of the literal God, Yahweh. The greatest personality in the universe. The greatest king in the universe. The only God in the universe. The greatest prophet in the universe. The greatest teacher in the universe. I call myself the teacher. But I don't even compare to him. And there isn't a soul that does. I want to clarify one more thing that I was thinking about, and I know that Yahweh wants me to tell you this. When we speak of Yahweh, when we speak of the Bible, you have been taught to hate religion. You have been taught by the Jew to hate Yahweh. You have been taught by the Jew many, many, many things, and you don't even know who gave you this teaching. When we speak of Yahweh here, and we tell you about the Bible, we aren't speaking of any religion. Yahweh does not ascribe to religions. Yahweh does not want anything to do with religions or politics or any of this garbage that these Jews have created to cause subdivisions. Remember Rush's album, Subdivisions? You know that Geddy Lee is a Jew? I thought he had me fooled. I thought he was an Eskimo. He's a Jew. He was talking. He's had a lifelong friend, Alex Lifeson, who I'm wondering if he's a Jew also, because I had a Jewish friend when I was younger, and his parents found out my lineage and immediately made sure that we were no longer friends. So it's very possible. I know Geddy Lee's a Jew. He said his grandparents were in the Holocaust. So it's very possible that in the group Rush, you have two Jews and a Freemason who is Neil Peart. You see that he does wear the Freemasonic garb, right? And you do see that they'd say they're the priests of the temples of Syrinx, don't you? And you do see that they have the colors of Freemasonry very often, which are black, red, and white. And you do notice on one of their newer albums called Snakes and Arrows, or the tour was called Snakes and Arrows, and so was Neil Peart's drum kit, you saw the Ouroboros snake on every one of the drums. Did you notice that? Now, some of you don't even know who Rush is, but it doesn't matter. There are those of you that do. And now you can connect some more dots. So we don't speak of religion. So just put that out of your mind. Dear Arian, if you are listening and you think because I say the name Yahweh and because I speak about the Bible, you think that I'm a Jew worshiper or I'm a Jew lover or whatever you might want to call me. I've been called all those things and it doesn't bother me anyway. I just get a laugh out of it. It's comedy. Because it shows how ignorant you really are. However, I still love you because you're my brothers and sisters, dear Arians. The thing is you are a whoring after other gods, like Odin, etc. I'm not even going to go into all that. You've got it right. You know who the enemy is. You know who the enemy of the Caucasian race is. You know the despicable acts of this enemy. You know that it has always been our enemy. You're 2/3 of the way there. But until you understand the Bible and Yahweh, not religion, if I was to speak to you about Yahweh and the Bible, I'm not asking you to join any churches. I'm not asking you to do anything of the sort. I'm telling you what the absolute truth is. If you're a truth seeker and you want the truth about everything, if you take the Bible and keep that out of it, you've taken the kernel out of it. You will not understand the picture. The Bible is the confirmation of all that's going on and that has gone on in our world. The Bible is the keystone to understanding what's going on and what has gone on in the world. It's the very word of Yahweh. I hope that's clear to you, Arian brothers. Okay. Now we're going to go back to The Mystery of the Serpent by B.F. Jackson. And we finished off on page 23 last week, but I want to read to you the quote once again because it is so absolutely stunning, this quote. I want you to pay attention. Try not to let your mind wander because this is that important. I want you to at least pay attention to this quote. Now, this quote is by Jacob Schiff. You've heard of him. He is one of the Rothschild shills. He came over here to America in the early 1900s or late 1800s to do Rothschild's bidding. He's the one that funded the Russian Revolution. Okay? Now pay attention. School's in, ladies and gentlemen, school's in. In a cafe in Budapest, Hungary, in 1919, Jew Jacob H. Schiff revealed another phase of that beast system. It was published in the book Geneva Against Peace by Comte de Saint-Olero. In 1936, in which he quotes Schiff, "The health of our golden calf," this is Schiff speaking now, "the health of our golden calf," the Jews, it's the god of gold, "demands that certain nations should be sick, namely those not of themselves to develop." In other words, they wouldn't have developed the sickness if it weren't for the Jews. Take, for example, pre-war Turkey, the sick man, as it was called by diplomats, which helped to keep us, the Jews, healthy. From it, we received concessions of every description. This is what they received by making them unhealthy. Listen. Banks, mines, harbors, railroads, etc. In short, its whole economical life was in our care. It was in the care of the Jews. Now listen to this next sentence. I want you to listen up real good. Prick those German shepherd ears way, way up. "And we cared so well for it that it died," he said, in Europe at least. Now that the accumulation of Turkey's wealth has become common property in the International Jewish Banking House of Rothschild, and that we have the fulfillment of our mission at hand of revealing to Christendom the fact that Jewry is Satan and reestablishing the world empire of Satan, that's what Jewry is doing, he continues, we need another sick man. In other words, we need another sick nation to leech off of, to become our host, so that we can make it sick and suck everything out of it. This alone would have been sufficient reason, apart from higher consideration, for grafting Bolshevism onto Tsarist Russia. Russia is now the sick man of the post-war days, and it is much more nourishing than the Ottoman Empire. It also, of course, it was nourishing. Let me explain to you something I've said before. Why is he saying it was much more nourishing? Well, the Tsar was the richest man in the world, and his money was in all the Rothschild banks, all the banks all over the world. When they killed the Tsar, they took all that money. And this is why I think Putin should get a tribunal with no Jews on it to acquire that money back. That is Russia's money. And there's interest since those days. Since 1917, there's a heck of a lot of interest that's due on that money. and that money belongs to Russia. It was stolen by the Jew, and it is not the Jew's money. It is still Russia's money. It's up to you to get that money, Mr. Putin, if you are real. So, he says that it is much more nourishing than the Ottoman Empire. It also does less in its own defense. If the god of gold is now ready for another feast, soon Russia will be a corpse, and we shall have nothing left to do but to cut it up. Even if a few drops of blood were spilled in the process, we Jews have no cause to get excited. A few drops of blood, huh? If you could know how many drops of blood had fallen during that period and onward, that blood could be on the, as high as the bridle horses, the bridle on the horses, okay? A few drops of blood spilled in Jewry's efforts to annihilate Christianity? See that? To annihilate Christianity? The record shows Jewry is directly responsible for the death in wars, mass murders, in deliberate starvation of more than 144 million people in the past 38 years. Now, this is 1919 we're talking about, okay? 144 million people in the past 38 years. When Adolf Hitler began attracting attention beyond Germany with his anti-Jewishness, notice how he didn't say with his anti-Semitism, because he knows that that's a bogus term as well. So anytime you see anti-Semitism, just change it to anti-Jewish. We no longer recognize the term anti-Semitic to be applied to Jews. It can only be applied to the Anglo-Saxon race. So, when Adolf Hitler began attracting attention beyond Germany with his anti-Jewishness, the Jew Kahilla in America selected James P. Warburg of Kuhn, Loeb and Company to finance him so as to build up a nationalist Germany and then push Anglo-Saxondom into attacking Germany and thus break the back of Christianity in Central Europe so as to pave the way for Jewry to seize all of Europe in the name of Russia in the final prelude to the destruction of the white race and the establishing of Satan's world empire. I know I've got your attention, or should I say, the dead B.F. Jackson, because he and his family were killed for writing these books. Major Robert H. Williams reported in his Williams Intelligence Summary for February 1950 about James P. Warburg's part in the plot against Christendom. He says, last November, the widow of the late General Ludendorff on trial at Nuremberg explained why her husband broke with Hitler, confirmed she reports in convincing detail. She stated that as early as the summer of 1929, James P. Warburg had undertaken an assignment from financial circles in America, which desired to exercise solitary influence on Germany in the unleashing of the national revolution. Warburg's task was to find the suitable man in Germany, and he entered into a contract with Adolf Hitler, who subsequently received sums of money amounting to $21 million up to January 30th, 1932, and still another $7 million thereafter, enabling him to finance his movement. Well, we've always had that question, how did he finance his movement? But you have to realize, what you have to realize about Adolf Hitler right here is, these Jews knew that this war would give them, because of the Balfour Declaration, that little land in Palestine, which, of course, they don't have, as I've said so many times. They only occupy a portion of it. 68 years almost now later, as I'm going to keep hammering on that fact. So, in the same way that the Nazis participated on sending Jews to this little place over there willingly instead of killing them, Hitler cooperated with the Jews in that way. I have no problem with you taking the Jews out of my country as long as you get the Jews out of my country. After the 1919 German Revolution, Jewry took over the country, lock, stock, and barrel. Now, this was, you know, this is pre-World War II. But you see, they thought they were going to have this land completed by World War I. It didn't happen. So that's why they knew World War II would come. They also knew World War III would come. But this is just inch by inch, step by step, the gradualism of the devil and his children. Jewry retained power until Hitler came on the scene. Then why was international Jewry so anxious to foment a nationalist revolution in Germany? Because they desired to destroy the Royal Judah tribe of Israel, the Nordic Germans. Because Jewry could not absorb them in mongrelization and to destroy Christianity in Central Europe. Now, listen to that. See, they weren't successful, and they hate. The Jews have a special hatred toward the tribe of Judah. Many in Russia were of the tribe of Judah. The people, the Boer people in South Africa are of the tribe of Judah. 55% of the population of America at this time were of the tribe of Judah, if not more than that. That was just Germans. 55% of the population were Germans. Okay? So they couldn't absorb them in mongrelization. What are they trying to do to them today? Is Jewry still trying to destroy Germany today? Why, of course, the answer is yes. And are they still trying to mongrelize them, their nation? The answer is yes. And is Germany going to stand for that? I believe the answer is no. So, after Adolf Hitler received the financial assistance, he disenfranchised the Jews in Germany, then set up a banking system of his own. Nevertheless, Anglo-American intelligence services learned that Hitler, Jew Rudolf Hess, and von Papen secretly called on Jew Baron Kurt von Schroeder in Cologne and obtained his guarantee for further assistance, for further finance of Hitler's schemes. Schroeder agreed to the proposition after bribing Hitler to place the Jews in strategical positions to direct the very heartbeat of National Socialism. Now, that could be true, or that might not be true. All these things are speculation. I doubt if Hitler was the kind of man that would sell his people out. Okay? But I could be wrong. Rudolf Hess became Deputy Führer. He is the son of an Egyptian Jewess. Yes. General von Haushofer was made geopolitical minister. He is a Jew. General Milch, became the head of the Luftwaffe. He is a Jew. Goebbels was with Hitler to the end. Now, that's what I heard, that Goebbels was a Jew. But I'm not positive of that. He was a Jew, this man says. All of which is in accordance with Jewry's protocol number 15, which says, but if there should arise in the midst a plot, then at the head of that plot will be no other than one of our most trusted servants. Baron Kurt von Schroeder was related to Baron von Schroeder of J.H. Schroeder & Company, Limited, London, England, which together with Messrs. N.M. Rothschild and Sons, Ruthers Limited, and the Imperial Chemical Industries assisted James P. Warburg of Kuhn and Loeb Company finance Hitler in accordance with Protocol Number 9, which says, "Nowadays, if any state raises a protest against us, it is only pro forma at our direction and at our discretion, for their anti-Jewish," it says anti-Semitism, "their anti-Jewish, for their anti-Jewish is indispensable," their anti-Semitism is indispensable to us for the management of our lesser brethren. Thus the Jew devil will murder his own sons so as to get peace, shalom, from one in authority, marom, which causes fear of the Jew, pashad, to rule, mashal, amidst those he abides, kum. These are all Greek or Hebrew words. I believe they're Greek. Hebrew, excuse me. We next observe the serpent race in Psalms 58, verse 4, in which the word poison is chema in the Hebraic. It means anger, heat, fury, rage, hot displeasure, wrath, to be furious. That poison is used on non-Jews having high moral and spiritual strength and refuse to lower themselves to the level of a Jew. Usually the approach is by bribery, concealed as a gift. What did I tell you about gifts? And as Chris Peed has pointed out, the German word for gift, the German word gift, means poison. Don't take gifts from Jews, especially. When you take gifts from people, you owe them something. Usually the approach is by bribery, concealed as a gift. When he fails to reach his intended victim, he lets fly the poison of fury, rage, and wrath in attempts of character assassination so as to kill one's business or political life. If the person is immune to the poison and the Jew cockatrice fails to silence the truth about his skullduggery, his final effort comes by using the poison of hot displeasure and becomes furious in premeditated cold-blooded murder. However, if it is not expedient for the reptile to personally murder his victim, or he is too cowardly to do it himself, he bribes some non-Jew to do the dirty work while the Jew reptile remains in ambush as a respectable citizen whose only crime, to hear him tell it, is being unfortunate enough of being born a Jew. In Amos 5:19 is the serpent Nakash, and the so-called divine wisdom in the Luciferian doctrine of spiritual illumination. The way the Hebraic word serpent is written in the original passage with bars means occult science. The reptile has nothing to crawl under. The wall which one was going to lean against in our national house is spiritual salvation through our Savior Jesus Christ. It is the same wall that is prophesied in Isaiah 60:18. One is inviting the sting of the cockatrice. If one seeks rest in spiritual salvation as preached by the so-called Christian denominations banded together in the Communistic Federal Council of Churches of Christ, which is sponsored and maintained by Jews in efforts to keep Christ Jesus out of the church houses, then enshrine Satan on one corner of the pulpit. He, as a Jew, has even been made the preacher in some of the denominations, and that is absolutely true, including the Catholic Church. One is guaranteed to receive snake bite if one leans against the false wall of the so-called Christian spiritual cults, which deny the sovereignty of Jesus Christ. Yes, that is what they're doing as they rewrite these Bible versions. What happens is they take the deity of Jesus Christ out of the Bibles. They reduce him to a mere prophet or a mere man. But he was a good man. Christians are requesting their pastors to define the word Leviathan, which is found in Job 41:1, Psalm 74:14, Psalms 104, verse 26, and Isaiah 27, verse 1. The Hebraic for Leviathan is the same as in English. It means crying, mourning, and a great water animal. Job and David are referring to the latter. Isaiah, however, is prophesying about something entirely different, yet he symbolizes it as having characteristics of that great water animal. Isaiah 27:1 says, "In that day, Yahweh, with his sore and great sword, shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea." That word piercing is barayach in the Hebraic. It is synonymous with the word flying in Isaiah 14:29. The word serpent is nakash, and it is written originally with bars and dots to prove it is the serpent race of Jews. The word dragon is tannin. It means great sea serpent. The word sea is yam. It means west, west side, western, westward. One observes, therefore, that particular sea is not a sea of water. Can you guess what it is, ladies and gentlemen? As Eli and I have discussed the book of Revelation, you know what the sea often refers to. Instead, it is the people of Christendom, which is further denoted in the time measurement of the day of Yahweh, which is Armageddon. The latter is the place and an era. The era is the 40-year day of Jacob's trouble. Very interesting. Brought out of the lowest depths of the dimension of the spirit by Jewry's era of Kali. It began in 1913 and ends in 1953. Now, this is what this book had claimed before, that the Jews believed that there was a 40-year period. And so in 1913, when they had passed these acts, you know, they had created the ADL, and they passed the Federal Reserve Act, and they passed the IRS Act, right? They figured they'd have it within 40 years and that the world would end in 1953, which, as you can see, did not happen. And of course, they thought they'd have that little nation over there directly after World War II, but that did not happen. And of course, they thought they'd have the New World Order in many, many different dates, including 2000. Daddy Bush was going to put a golden capstone on the pyramid in Egypt. Didn't happen. So, in the near future, we will see the day of Yahweh in which Satan's serpent race of Jews will be annihilated in Christendom. It is inevitable, so Israel can sweep out and clean up the kingdom of God before the beginning of the millennial reign of our Savior Jesus Christ on the throne of David, which is the throne of England today. The annihilation is also portrayed in Isaiah 34, verse 5 and 6, in which the Jew is clearly mentioned by name, Idumea. Write that down, ladies and gentlemen, and look it up, because we know about many places where it speaks of it. That's Isaiah chapter 34, verse 5 and 6. And then Ezekiel 35, verse 15. Verse 36, verse 5. And write this down also. Zechariah 14, 21, where he again is mentioned by name, Cainite, and Revelation 20, verse 1 through 3. We observe the dragon in Isaiah 27, 1 is a tannin, or a great sea serpent. Then in Exodus 7, 9, verse 10, verse 12, the word serpent is also tannin, but it means a howling dragon lizard. Now, you see, ladies and gentlemen, you see as he speaks here, it shows you that every time you see the word serpent, it can mean very different things, depending on whether it has bars and dots under it, the word. Or it can mean, you know, which means the serpent race of Jews, right? And so we see that tannin means a great sea serpent or a serpent, but we also know that Nakash is a serpent. You see what I mean? So without the bars and dots, you know, it means a serpent or a, in the garden, he was an enchanter, right? So this is why when you read the Bible, if you do not understand the Greek, or you can't refer to it, or refer to the Hebrew, that you are reading things in the wrong color, shall I say. So, inasmuch as he is pronounced in the Hebraic the name as Isaiah's sea serpent, then both creatures are shaped the same, yet one lives on land and the other in water. The one in Isaiah 27:1 is symbolical, yet the other is a living lizard, and because the Leviathan serpent and dragon in Isaiah 27:1 are one reptile symbolized as being shaped like a lizard, then we observe the Leviathan in Job 41, 1, and it's in 74, 14, 104, 26, had the same meaning as the one in Isaiah 27, 1. We know David and Job are referring to a crocodile. Moreover, when we denote the word Leviathan, also means mourning and crying, and the word piercing is synonymous with the flying in Isaiah 14:29. Then Leviathan is further revealed to be a crocodile. Thus, we observe Isaiah in symbolizing the serpent race of Jews have attributes similar to crocodiles. When his slithering chicanery backfires in his face, when a nation wakes up to the fact that it has been sabotaged and destroyed by the Jews, who were admitted into the nation so as to find sanctuary from persecution and destruction and crying, yes, crocodile tears, I would say, right? Yes, cocodrilo, I forget the word. Lagrimas de cocodrilo is the Spanish for crocodile tears. Lagrimas de cocodrilo. Okay? So he goes on from there. He says, the Jew sheds crocodile tears in efforts to win sympathy and pity from the betrayed people driving him root and branch from among them. He flees from the justified punishment and sheds more crocodile tears at the gates of another nation while crying and moaning his age-old lamentation that he is a homeless refugee fleeing from punishment piled on for no reason other than that he is a Jew. Does that sound familiar? Yes, the poem of the Duck and Hens by Lincoln Rockwell. He is admitted into the sanctuary of the sympathetic nation, and the flying crocodile that he is submerges in the cool water of human decency with only his unblinking watery eyes showing above the surface at places where trusting people go to stake their spiritual thirst. Or I think it was supposed to say to take their spiritual thirst for God and material needs for the first necessities of life. When they wade out in striking distance of the lurking beast, he grabs them and spiritually and materially devours them without the least pity. Inasmuch as Leviathan refers to the crocodile as well as to crying and mourning, it is obvious that from our ancient Israelite progenitors is where we Anglo-Saxon Celtic people obtained the expression crocodile tears. Ladies and gentlemen, that's very interesting. I'm always interested to find out where these sayings come from, and there it is. After coordinating this meaning of the Hebrew words Leviathan, piercing, crooked, flying, serpent, and dragon in Job 26, Isaiah 14:29 and 27:1, we observe the Jew crocodile fleeing, from his justified punishment in the last hour of the day of Yahweh. When his slithering silent chicanery backfires in his unblinking crying eyes with greater vengeance than in all of the annals of history, because it will be the national redemption of the house of Israel from Satan's counterfeit race. Isaiah has warned you, take heed, stand steady. This is what I tell you too. It's funny. I stand up, be a man. Take heed, prick your ears up, observe, learn, listen. So here's what he says again. Isaiah has warned you, take heed, stand steady, and observe the hand of Yahweh's work amidst his people. Be not deceived by the crocodile tears of the mourning Jew. The only sorrow he will have is we, stupid oxen of his, he calls us cattle, right? Refuse to abandon Christ Jesus for Satan and then bow down and worship the King of the Jews as God and his race as the lesser gods. So this will be the sorrow of the Jew. So what he's saying is we will never do that, of course. Jeremiah 46:22 says, the voice thereof shall be like a serpent, for they shall march with an army and come against her, Egypt, with axes as hews of wood. It is the cursed serpent race using the Chaldeans as an axe to chop Egypt to pieces. So the Luciferian priesthood with the army can move the Egyptian treasure to Babylon. We are the priests of the temples of Syrinx, says the Jew band. Yes. Lovely, isn't it? So Egypt to pieces to the Luciferian priesthood with the army. So the army can move the Egyptian treasure to Babylon and imprison Pharaoh Ushabra in the Babylonian dungeon and consummate the Babylonian empire in a Babylon in which the serpent priests of finance would rule from Babylon after consummating the world empire of Satan in accordance with Isaiah 14:29. The word serpent in the above passage is Nakash in the original, and it is written with the bars and dots to prove it is the serpent priesthood of Babylon, which is substantiated by secular records. Jeremiah's prophecy was fulfilled in 566 BC when the Luciferian priesthood succeeded in consummating the great Babylonian empire through King Nebuchadnezzar II. The 29th through the 32nd chapters of Ezekiel prophesy the same episode. In all the annals of history, while the serpents murdered and robbed one another, God used them to destroy their own evilness so as to prevent them from becoming too strong. God placed Nebuchadnezzar II on the throne of Babylon in order to destroy the devil in Tyrus. Ezekiel 28, 12 through 19, and imprisoned the insane Pharaoh Ushabra of Egypt so that the king of Babylon could incorporate all Western Asiatic civilization into one empire and set the stage to raise up the branch of Satan, in whose house his scepter would be broken and God would not permit him to reestablish a world empire. See, what I've always said to you is it's very interesting that he was allowed to establish the empire in Babylon with Nimrod, right? But Yahweh destroyed it. So they're trying to do it again, and they've tried to do it many times, and they can't do it. They won't be able to do it. As grim as it may look to you, ladies and gentlemen, even if they could get it up for a day or for a year, which I really doubt. I don't think they'll get it up at all because Yahweh will just destroy it again. He's not going to allow that. Plain and simple. When the Babylonian Empire was consummated, God had Satan where he wanted him. And in rapid succession, the serpents murdered one another in greediness. The serpent's Luciferian doctrine will be destroyed by the serpent in accordance with 2 Chronicles 10:9. The serpent there is Ophis, one taking that deadly thing to one's bosom renounces spiritual life because the portions of the Luciferian doctrine, Ophis, that's O-P-H-I-S, which the serpent race, the Ophites, permits us to see seems so logical, it appears to be the true way of spiritual salvation. However, it leads one into the swamp of spiritual death. And if one goes all out for it, one drinks the serpent's deadly misrepresented liberalism, fraternity, brotherhood, and equality, then marries a Jew, and one's line is killed in the satanic blood system of Jewry, and in turn becomes a vampire. You're hearing this live on Saxon's Creed Radio Show, ladies and gentlemen. The serpent in 2 Corinthians 11:3 is an Ophis. It's amazing. It really is. He is the serpent race of Jews, the same who beguiled Mother Eve. St. Paul is worried about the Christians being influenced by the new Gnostic version of the Luciferian doctrine revised by Simon Magus, the Simon of Acts. Yes, S-I-M-M-O-N in Acts, chapter 8. 9 through 13, to sabotage the faith in God. So Paul was worried about that. In Revelation 9, 19, is the record of something observed by St. John when, Christ Jesus took him into the dimension of the spirit in 35 AD. He says, for their power is in their mouth and in their tails, and in their tails and for their tails, were like unto serpents. That serpent is an Ophis, yet it is not the serpent race or its religion. It symbolizes the type of cannon used by the Turks in 1453. Hi, Eli. How you doing? All right. We just had this going on. I believe if you haven't heard Eli and I are doing the Book of Revelation some justice. And we've just finished the sixth part, and I thank Eli for having me on his show to do it. I'm enjoying it thoroughly, and that's exactly what we had just talked about, the Turks' cannons. So let me go on here. It symbolizes the type of cannon used by the Turks in 1453 AD when they conquered the Eastern Holy Roman Empire. The war, however, was financed and fomented by Jewry's Greater Sanhedrin, which had been in Constantinople since 79 AD. That cabal remained there until 1552. Archaeologists, that's after they'd been conquered, you see. 1552 is 100 years or give or take a few after they'd been conquered. Archaeologists have recovered guns used in the campaign. Their muzzles were cast in the image of a lion's head, Revelation 9:17, and their tails were fuses ignited by torches. John describes them as being similar to the serpent, who in 1453 had his tail anchored around Lhasa, Tibet. From whence came the spark that caused him to belch forth the fire and brimstone of geopolitics, which caused the Turco-Mongol invasion of Christendom. In accordance with the genealogical record of Jewry's current devil god, Prince Abdul Baraba Baha, the serpent in Constantinople, 1453, was the Turco-Mongol Jew Amarath 2. From Genesis 3 to Revelation 9, we have observed the people we know as Jews are the serpent race of the devil, whose evilness is the devil and his demons and dimension of spirit. To prove it without leaving any doubts in our minds, St. John in Revelation 12:9 and 20 verse 2 lays Jewry wide open and exposes him all at once as the red dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan. Irrespective of the fact, let us not end this expose at this occasion, because one may yet ask, how can the devil be the king of the Jews and Jewry be satanic? For is not the devil purely a spiritual being down on the lower regions of the earth? Does not the Bible declare the Jews are God's chosen people? Yes, the devil, the one they call God. But I told you, there is no other God than Yahweh. Guaranteed. The answer to both is emphatically no. And the biblical message proves it. Any historian knows they are not God's chosen people, and they are not of Israelite extraction. And the Bible sets forth in plain English that Jewry is the literal household of the devil. And in 1920, Dr. Oscar Levy, a Jew in England, stated in the preface of the book, you might want to get this book, pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen, The World Significance of the Russian Revolution. Chris, are you listening? The World Significance of the Russian Revolution. Are not the Jews the inventors of the chosen people myth? the theory of hell being in neither nether regions of the earth or any other place where the devil resides to burn human souls after death of the body is Jewish, and they obtained it from their ancestral devil god, Nergal Shar Yuzer, a son of King Nebuchadnezzar II of Babylon, which was slipped over the head of Christendom in order to deceive us with that lie so we would not see the truth that Jewry is satanic. Enoch of the Adamic line of Seth says in his messianic prophecy, the devil came out of the dimension of the spirit about 41,000 years ago. He did it on his own accord, and God did not create him. Yet, Colossians 1:16 said, God created everything. And John 1:3 said, all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. That is true. God, however, did not create the devil. Therefore, I know what he's going to say here. This is interesting. Pay attention. Therefore, he and his counterfeit race of Jews are unrealities as a lie and an error in the tangible form of humans. John 8:44. God, however, created Lucifer, yet he died. His real name is Halel or Satanyel. Yet he died when he failed to conform in accordance with divine law. And the spiritual deadness became Satan, or God's adversary. He was then thrust out from the throne of God. He was hurled, remember? He was hurled out from the throne of God, or Yahweh, in the high plains of the spirit, or heaven, to the lowest depths of the dimension of spirit. He was totally cut off from God, and he thought of ways of getting revenge, yet he could not touch God in any manner. Therefore, he came out of the pit of spiritual upside downness to the material plane without God's approval in order to get revenge against God by spiritually and physically killing man, because man's life force is of God. And by killing man, the pain would also hurt God. When he was in the pit, he was intangible spiritual evilness. Yet when he transposed himself to the material plane, he was tangible flesh, yet counterfeit, because he was in no manner part of God and the transposition that was in direct violation of divine law. In other words, he would be a plant that was not planted by Yahweh. Genesis 14:18 gives us a relative picture of the situation in which God's Christ Son of Righteousness as Melchizedek stepped out from the dimension of the Spirit to renew his covenant with Father Abraham in the sacrament ritual. He came into the material plane in accordance with divine law because that law is in his being. He was real and as tangible as Abraham. The wine and bread he brought out of the dimension of the spirit was also real and tangible. He and Abraham ate the bread and drank the wine. In Genesis 19:1-22 is the record of the two archangels who stepped out of the dimension of spirit into the material plane in the interest of Lot and his family. They are tangible food. They ate tangible food cooked by Lot's wife. They were tangible. In Genesis 32:24-30 is the record where another archangel stepped out of the spiritual plane and wrestled with the father Jacob all night. He was as tangible as Jacob. In Luke 1:1-38 is the record where Gabriel, stepped out of the dimension of spirit to inform Zacharias. See, sometimes it's Zechariah and sometimes it's Zacharias. It's the same person. that his wife would conceive and bear John the Baptist. He then made himself manifest to the Virgin Mary and informed her that she had been selected to be the mother of Yeshua, or God. Her son was Jesus Christ, the same as Melchizedek in Genesis 14, 18. He, as Melchizedek, could have stepped out of the dimension of the Spirit in full stature, as he did in Genesis 14, 18. In that condition, however, he would have not been subject to death, which he had to endure in order to destroy the devil. Now notice again, Yahweh, or Yeshua, is a priest. Yeshua is not only a priest, but he's a prophet. He is the spirit of prophecy. Notice also that he is God. Okay? Remember the beginning of this message? It's amazing how it all connects. Yahweh does it, ladies and gentlemen. I ask him to give me the messages he wants me to deliver, and he certainly delivers, and I thank him greatly for that. Now, we don't have a lot of time left. Let me finish this paragraph, and we'll end here on page 32. And we'll continue next week. I'm enjoying this, and I hope you are, dear listener. It was essential, therefore, for his spiritual energy to be born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. John 1:13. So the devil could murder him, then be resurrected in order to cancel spiritual and physical death in the house of Israel. See, not, he didn't do that for all men of the world. Although it says, then ultimately for all humanity here. I don't know if this guy is a universalist or a Catholic. There are Catholic overtones I see here, but neither here nor there. You take the nuggets from these things as you will. Use your brains. Use your common sense and learn to decipher. You know, as you're digging for gold, you have to be able to tell the difference between fool's gold and gold. So let's move along here, right? Let me get back to that one part. So the devil could murder him and then be resurrected in order to cancel spiritual and physical death in the house of Israel, then ultimately for all humanity after Israel teaches men the truth about God and things spiritual and things material without the devil and his satanic race of Jews being around to sabotage and destroy the work. In Acts 1:11, are two of the archangels talking to the disciples of Christ after the latter passed back into the spiritual plane after his resurrection from death. He passed back into the spiritual plane in the same body his disciples loved, walked and talked with, ate and drank with, and that which was pierced on the cross. Yet, at the moment of ascension, his powers of the cosmos changed the vibratory impulses of the spiritual energy of which his body was made, and the intensity of vibration changed him to tangible, visible spirit as he presented himself to James, Peter, and John in Matthew 17. So we'll cut it there. So what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? What do you think? It's a very interesting read, is it not? It's funny that you notice the copycat or the imitations that Hillel does of Yahweh's, because he's a wannabe God, so he tries to emulate the things God does. For one, Yahweh has a church, but it is not a religion. And the devil has a church, which are all these religions that are in the world at this point. You know, the Jewish version of Christianity is certainly the devil's church. Freemasonry is certainly the devil's church. They claim that they are the light of the world. Yes. And they're seeking light. They happen to be some of the most unhappy people I've ever come across, to be honest with you. Very hateful, but they pretend that they're full of love. They love their own serpents, but they hate the Adamic race, even if they are of the Adamic race. So, he copycats everything. And, you know, as I was saying, as Yahweh killed the firstborn of Egypt, Herod the Edomite Jew killed the firstborn trying to kill Christ. It's very interesting how these things all, these mirrored things continue throughout the Bible. And the Bible is chock full of learning, chock full of truth, chock full of pure truth, undaunted truth. There may be problems with translations, but you know, even as you and I speak today, if I spoke to you today, we may have problems in our translation of speaking to one another. You may not understand the color of my language. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.
Hi, this is David James with the Eurofolk Radio Network here at eurofolkradio.com. Be sure to check out our new show, Founding Fathers, Wednesdays, 5:30 to 7 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time, or 10:30 to 12 a.m. UK GMT.